Now I'd like to introduce our speaker for this evening, Miriam.
Hi, I'm Miriam. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Miriam.
Hi, I'm honored to speak here tonight and wanted to thank Jamal for asking me to speak. It's been a while since I've been over the hill. To qualify, my absolute date is November 1st, 1998. I am 45 pounds down from my top weight. So I was 175, I was a size 14. I'm now 130, 128. I'm a size 4 or 6. And food is not an issue today. And I can tell you that back then, food was everything. Food was everything. I couldn't imagine. I had gotten so used to living life on a diet mentality that I knew that as soon as I got off the diet, I'd be up. And that's what would happen. In between diets, I would be like, just let me at the food. Finally, let me at the food. And I'd eat it. And I remember one week, I was in between diets. I was in between, like, Diet Center and Jenny Craig or something. Mm-hmm. And within that week, I gained 8 to 9 pounds. I was like a binge. I just couldn't get enough of it. And I knew that it was trying to control it. But the more I tried to control it, the more it backfired. And let me back up a little bit to how it was. I really truly believe that my makeup is different than most normal folk when it comes to food. I can tell you that my brother and my mom and dad are fairly normal. My mom, she could use a program, and she has her own program actually. But when it comes to food, nobody has a weird reaction to food like I do. And growing up, I was 3 years old. This is an example of how my makeup, I believe, is different. I know it is. I'm an addict. I'm a compulsive overeater. That's all I need to know in order to recover. And that's what the program says. And so at three years old, you know, my cousin, when he was three, was lost in the mall. You know, somehow he wandered. And he went wandering in the mall, just kind of happy, looking around, you know, very happy kid, no big deal. Same thing happened to me. At 3 years old, I got lost in the mall. I wandered off. And my mother panicked, and she got the security guards after me. And then I remember this, too. And do you know where I went? I went right upstairs to the See's Candy store, and I stole a bucket of See's Candy, and I brought it down to my mom. And I was like, look what I got, you know? So at three already, it was like, ooh, candy, yeah, you know? And so that just goes to show you that, you know, something ain't quite right there. And then what happened at nine, I was put on a diet right away. And I don't like to be known as like, Miriam, oh, Miriam with the diabetes, you know, because that's always like, oh, I'm so sorry. And it's like, you know, don't do that, please. But what happened was at nine, I was diagnosed with juvenile diabetes. It is in my family, and I got it. And I was a normal weight, was not fat at all. But my head was not right, because I remember being 9 years old and thinking I'm fat. And at nine, they put me on a diet, and they said she needs to eat 2 breads, 2 meats, and a fruit for breakfast, and 2 breads and a fruit for whatever it was, at nine. You know, and she can never eat sugar again. Well, don't tell me I can't do something, because believe me, as soon as you tell me I can't, I'm going to do everything I can to find a way to do it, especially being the rebellious addict that I am. Not anymore, but I was, and it's still there, believe me. But this program stops me from acting on those things. So anyhow, at nine I was put on a diet, and weight was an issue at that time from that point on. And my mother did a pretty good... She did what any normal parent would do who was told, you know, your kid's diabetic, you've got to control her food, you've got to give her shots, and if you don't, you know, she's going to not be healthy and she could have some serious complications. So my parents did whatever they could to try and control me. The thing is, I can't be controlled, and I fought it. And what happened was between 9 and 11 and a half, she did a really good job of controlling my weight, but I thought I was fat. And I was on a swim team, and I hated it, and I was thin, but I thought I was fat. The whole time, thinking I'm fat, I'm ugly, I'm fat, comparing myself to the tall, skinny, you know, 11-year-olds, 13-year-olds, whatever. And at 11 and a half, she said, okay, Miriam's okay now, you know, we can let her go. And I was actually the first group of sixth graders to go to junior high. And she said, okay, she's fine now. So ironically, I teach sixth grade, which is the program. It's so not me. This program has given me everything plus 20-fold that I could ever imagine. But anyway, backtracking, at sixth grade, she said, okay, we don't need to watch her anymore so much. You know, we don't need to watch everything she's eating. Well, that was when I just went to town. And at nutrition and lunch, I remember eating those brownies, and I remember eating those big, round, fat, greasy cookies, and one was not enough, you know. And I remember, you know, the alcoholic, a lot of the time they remember their first drink. You know, that first, like, oh, this is it. You know, like, this is what's doing it for me. And they chase that. And I, you know, and I did that with food. I remember very vividly my first, like, this is it. This is my relief, you know. For me, it is food first. You know, alcohol, I would wonder sometimes. But for me, it's food. And what happened was at 13, between 11 and 12 and 13, I gained about 65 to 70 pounds in 1 year. And that was devastating. And from that point on, I was considered a fat kid. I was a fat kid. You know, I'm 5 feet tall. I'm tiny. I didn't know I was tiny until I got abstinent in this program. But for a little girl to be gaining that much weight, to have juvenile diabetes, for everyone to be telling you you're killing yourself, and for everyone to be watching me kill myself, no one's watching me eat, of course, but it's evident, you know. And, I mean, we wear this disease. It certainly isn't glamorous, in my opinion. So I gained all this weight, and everybody in my family's going, how are we going to get her to lose weight? And all of a sudden, I'm like, how am I going to lose weight? So I tried every diet off, you know, you could think of. I tried everything. And the thing is that the more I tried, the more it backfired. And I did this for years and years and years. And I thought I was too, it just progressed, you know. There's one diet after another, and I could never lose weight. Some people talk about being able to lose the weight. I never did. I could only be on a diet for about a week. And then after a week, it was like, you know, I'd take a bite here, take a bite there, and all of a sudden it's this whole controlling game again. And so after, like, you know, doing numerous diets, and I was hospitalized twice because of this disease too, because my blood sugars were so out of control. I don't mention that too often, but this disease put me in the hospital twice. And they said, oh, we just need to get her food under control, her blood sugars under control. But I knew as soon as I was out of the hospital, forget about it, I was right back to square one again. And there was no stopping me. And the thing is that I could do friends and I could do jobs. I was the overachiever because I felt so inadequate for having this problem. What the hell is wrong with me, you know? And I couldn't do this. And the more effort I put into it, the more I couldn't do it. That was the thing. And 16, 17... by this time, you know, I'm all over the place, and the food had gotten to me physiologically, too. The thing is, my brain was so clouded with this disease, with sugar, and with a thinking that was disease, and I was getting crazier and crazier. I am not the person, you know, that you see today. I was not that person a long time ago, and people who are still here know that. And at 17, and I believe, too, that my mother became a therapist because of me, because I was like the pink elephant in the house, you know. I was the alcoholic with food. And the more they tried to stop me, the more I hated them. And the more they told me I needed to lose weight, the more I hated them. The more I felt like they didn't understand. Nobody understands. And the more isolated I became. And at 17, 18... you know, my mom's a therapist, so she knows about the 12-step programs. She goes, why don't you go to OA? And this was after doing numerous, numerous diets. And I remember by this time I was becoming more hopeless and more hopeless and just like, you know, just so hopeless about not even diets but life, you know. Like, what's the point? I don't get, you know, what's wrong with me? And that was when I was finally willing to come to OA. And if there's anything I can stress is that for me, I had to get to exactly where I had to get to the next place. There was no way I was going to be able to recover on the level that I did and be willing to recover on the level that I was willing to recover on unless I'd gone through these things first, if I could say that. I came to OA when I was 18, devastated. I had hit that incomprehensible demoralization, and the reason was because my mother caught me binging finally, and thank goodness I had those moments of clarity that said, you need help. And it wasn't anybody, it was me, like, I need help. And some people don't have those moments of clarity. Maybe they do, they don't pay attention to it. I had two. And my first one was when my mother caught me binging, and she said, and that was like, I felt like a deer caught in headlights. Nobody ever saw me eat. I ate in the middle of the night every night for 10 years. And every night I'd say I wouldn't do it, and I did it every night. I couldn't go to sleep without eating in the middle of the night every night. So she caught me during the day. She said, why don't you go to OA? I said, okay. I went to the Darby office in Reseda, sat in a fog for about 3 months, didn't know what was going on, but people talked about food. And people talked about doing things with food that I had done that I thought nobody ever talked about. People talked about eating out of the trash. You know, saying they're not going to eat something and then going right back to it 2 hours later and eating it. Eating it all. You know, having a piece of cake in the refrigerator and not being able to do anything but think about that piece of cake until it's gone. You know, that was me. And everything else that went along with it, all the feelings, all the shame, all that, you know, people talked about it. And for the first time, I felt like people accepted me and understood me and didn't judge me, because I was so used to being judged. And I was so isolated. And to be honest with you, men noticed me too. They were much older than me, but they still were like, hey, hi. And I was a fat girl in L.A. A fat teenage girl in L.A. nonetheless, but with a great personality. And, you know, guys aren't too sexual. They aren't like, hey, she's smart. I really like her. You know, it was kind of like, it was hard. So anyhow, and that was on my whole inventory, believe me. That was on my huge inventory list. Huge four step on that one. And boy, did I recover from that. Anyway, so to backtrack a little bit, I hung out in OA, and I wasn't mature enough really to work the steps until I was mature enough. That's my opinion. I hung out from 18 to 24, so about 6 years I hung out in the OA rooms and listened and took what I could and did what I could, and they say, take what you want, leave the rest. I did that to the best of my ability, but I did not recover on the level that I really started to recover on until I hit a bottom on the inside. See, what happened was I hung out in OA for about 6 years, and things on the outside started to really get better. But the problem was I never worked on my insides. I was kind of doing steps 1 and 12. I knew I had a problem, and I was talking about the program all I wanted, but I hadn't really done the steps. It's kind of like, you know, exercise. You know about exercise, and you can talk about how great exercise is all you want, but in terms of really getting out there and doing it, it's a whole different story. And when that happens, boy, do you see results. So it was the same thing in terms of program, but it was the best I could do at the time. So what happened was I started to kind of work in an industry that I thought would make me cool, and I thought would validate me. And I was chasing the outside to fill me up on the inside. And the thing is, the more the outsides happened, the more I felt like crap. And my thought processes, my belief system. I grew up with this disease. I am an addict. My perceptions of the world are skewed. And I didn't come to that until I had hit a bottom on the inside, because things on the outside were getting good. But the thing is that if a good opportunity came along, or if somebody was attracted to me, I had so much distortion within my brain that I couldn't allow any of it to come. I'd say no to it. I'd push it along. I couldn't. People would say I was capable, and all I felt was, I'm not. No, I'm not. Don't you understand? I'm not. And my thoughts and my words, it all governed what I thought in my head. And that was my second moment of clarity, was, you know what? Miriam's thinking my makeup is wrong. And if I don't stop, I'm going to keep eating. And what happened was I maintained like 160 to 165. So I had lost a little bit of weight, but I was still heavy. And but I was cool with that, because I wasn't gaining weight, you know. And hey, people think I'm great, right? Well, that wasn't working for too long. And I was trying to get people's approval all over the place. And the more I got approval, the more it backfired. I even had a stadium. I used to sing, talk about trying to get approval. And I sang at a stadium. And people like cheered and yelled and the national anthem and screamed and stood up. And the whole time I'm thinking, I'm a fake. doesn't matter. Don't you know? And all I could focus on was the one person who said I wasn't good enough. You know, that's my disease. And that's when I realized it's my makeup. I can't allow any goodness into my life. So I hit a bottom, and that's when I started to work steps 4 through 12. And that's when I really got abstinent, and that's when I really got a sponsor who was willing to kick my ass. Excuse my language. I liked it when people swore sometimes. But that's what happened. And I was hanging out in OA for 6 years, not really doing anything, just kind of going to meetings and talking to people. And I came to a meeting, and this was in August of 1998. And I quit that business. I quit the music business. For me, it was killing me. It was a pure reflection of how I felt about myself. And working in the shadows of everybody else who's successful, and me just kind of hanging out and trying, and I'm going to prove myself. And for me, that wasn't going to work. And I quit the music business, moved out of my parents' house. That's another thing. I lived in a lot of fantasy. Fantasized about, you know, traveling from New York to L.A., and one day my life will be this. And in the meantime, I'm 165 pounds on a 5-foot, you know, tiny girl, and I live at home with my parents. I haven't paid a bill in my life. And I'm 24, 25 years old. And quit the music industry. Didn't know what I was going to do, but knew I couldn't do that. Knew I had to stop everything and change. And the first year of my abstinence, November 1, 1998, I quit that in August. Was really devastated in September. Around October, I went to meetings, and I really asked for help, and I started to really ask for help in meetings. I had no problem voicing my need for help. And I got a sponsor, and I shared, and this woman looked at me when she was sharing, and she wasn't anybody that I would have chosen. She wasn't anybody famous. She wasn't anybody, like, you know, who had a nice car, you know. She had a nice car, but that's, you know, normally that would have been the reason. She was willing to help me, and she was willing to save my life, or help me save my life. She was willing to show me how to work the steps, and I was scared of her my first year, but she did not spare my feelings. You know, she would tell me how to live in the solution, and when she said she'd offer to sponsor me, she told me to do a number of things, and I did it. And I dove into this program my first year of abstinence like I delve into the disease. I did the opposite. And I was told the solution is in action. Action, action, action. So the thing is that I put so much thinking, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all I could think about was what I look like, what I should look like, what you think I look like. F you, because you're judging me on what I look like. And one day, and, you know, all this fantasy. So what happened was, I put my whole year, one day at a time, 1 second at a time. It wasn't one day for me. It had to be one moment at a time. If I was going to give up my addiction, give up eating all day and starving and exercising and all that, you know, if I was going to give that up, I had to replace it with something. I couldn't just be abstinent and be fine. If I could, I wouldn't be here. I had to replace it with the tools and the steps and action. I got a lot of commitments. I did a lot of service. I went to a lot of meetings. I went to at least a meeting a day because I was so scared my first year and so uncomfortable in my own skin my first year, crying all the time. I mean, I remember being at Serenity Sunday, and I had like 63 days. And, you know, that's a big meeting, and it's a huge meeting. And I was nervous, and I was shaking, and I felt like people at the podium were joking around about this disease. And for me, I'm crawling out of my skin. I'm holding on for dear life, you know, just to stay abstinent 1 second at a time. And people are joking. I went up there, and I was shaking, and I was crying, and doesn't anybody, you know, I had no problem. I did whatever it took to recover, and I did not care what people thought about me because I was saving my life, and I knew that. And I stopped a lot of my behaviors my first year. I used to go to a lot of parties and hang out with a lot of certain types of people that I was trying to attain to be, trying to be like, you know, trying to get their approval. My first year I stopped. I didn't go to one party. I went to sometimes 2-3 meetings a day. I went to a lot of other 12-step program meetings, and I just sat there. And I got a higher power right away. Thank goodness that there is this man in this program who has a lot of recovery, who didn't spare my feelings, who didn't care if I felt bad, because we need to feel bad if we're going to recover, in my opinion. And he said, Miriam, you know what your problem is? Selfishness, self-centeredness. Read the big book, pages 62 through 69, and I'll see you at a meeting. And thank God I did what he said. I read those pages, and it said that we were governed by people's actions, places, and things, and that we had to find a higher power. Well, if I was going to do this process of the 12 steps and 12 traditions, and I was going to recover, I had to find a higher power that was going to get me through these moments when I felt like I was going to die if I didn't eat. And believe me, it was often my first year. Sometimes all day, all night. And I'd go to late night AA meetings. Excuse me, I hope that's okay to say, but I would. I'd go to those late night 10:30 meetings because at night I was nuts. And I needed to be around people who were withdrawing off alcohol and cocaine because that's how I felt, withdrawing off of my addiction and doing everything differently. So when he said that, I got a higher power too right away, and I delved into a teaching credential program because I thought, well, I got to support myself. I don't know what I'm going to do, and teachers are nice. They won't scare me. So I did that, and I got absent my first year, went to a lot of meetings, went to the teaching credential program, and got a higher power that the big book says will protect me. And my higher power became something that I never felt I had. And it was something that I conjured up in my mind, and I figured if it existed in my mind, and it wasn't a person, place, or thing, because that's what governed me and got me to this place of crap, then I had to believe in something different and act as if. And that's what people who had recovery told me to do. So my higher power was that. It became very personal. It became my best friend, my lover, my protector, my father. In those moments when I wanted to, sounds kind of gross, doesn't it? But hey, whatever works. But it was something that was in my brain. And whenever I was scared, which was all the time, except in meetings. I was not scared in meetings, which is why I loved going to meetings, because I was relieved in meetings. But when I was in a situation like student teaching, for example, and I'm not binging, and I had lost my weight, I said this, okay, I don't want to go all over the place, but my higher power in those situations when I wanted to eat, because I ate over feelings. If I was uncomfortable, it was only a matter of time when I'd be back into the food. So if I wasn't going to go back into the food and keep feeling uncomfortable and angry and upset and crying and all these feelings, I had to believe that my higher power had me here for a reason, because abstinence is a gift from my higher power, from your higher power, from the higher power. And if we're going to do this gift thing that he has given us, then we have to know how to do his work. For me, if God brought me to this place of being abstinent, and God is here, and in this moment right now, I'm talking about how I do it and did it. God, if you don't want me to eat that candy or that ice cream, and you don't want me to destroy myself anymore with that, and you are what they say you are, then right now I'm scared, and you better protect me and show me what to do. Because you made me this way. And that's how I would talk to him. And the thing is that in situations when I felt like, okay, I'm going to go out. You know, in situations when I felt like, this is it. This is where my whole life can go right or left. And when I believed that there was a higher power, because this program taught it to me, and my sponsor showed me, it's here. My life got better. And I was able to abstain in that moment. Not for the day, but in that second, in that minute, in that hour. And I lived through that scary situation. I was able to do the next one and use my higher power and realize, okay, I got through it. I didn't die. And the thing is that situations come up that are scary. The more I walk through it with my higher power and with the women in this program and with this program, the more I can face the next one. And that's my experience, and it's preparing me for better things to come in life. And that's what has been happening. And believe me, I use these tools and I use these steps like no tomorrow. My sponsor told me to do A, B, C, D, and E, and maybe F, G, H, all these things. But you know what? I was willing to do anything she told me to do. If she told me, go to Valencia, I live in Encino, go to Valencia and take that newcomer to Laguna and take him back to Valencia, I would have done it. Anything to be out of this disease. And that's what I mean by action out of the disease, because if that was 3 hours driving, hell, that's 3 hours out of my head. I'll do anything to get out of my head. And that's where I would feel better. So my sponsor also said to make phone calls, call 2 people a day and talk to them on the phone and blah, blah, blah. And what happened as a result is I've acquired a huge network of women who have a lot of recovery who are ahead of me in this. And every day I talk to them, at least 3 or 4 of them, sometimes all 10 or 12 of them. Well, there's more than that even. But, you know, in situations where I don't know how to handle this, I don't know how to do this, they guide me through it. They talk to me, they tell me how to do it, and it's all programmed. It's all the stuff that they were told, you know, through this. And what's happened as a result, how it's like today, and I would have never thought this at my age, and anybody who's here, there's nobody that this can't happen to. There's nobody that can't get recovery in my eyes. Nobody is too special to not get this. Everybody can get this if they want it and if they take the action towards it. We have to be accountable. This is only my opinion, by the way, but this is my experience. I had to be accountable and I had to take personal responsibility to recover. And then once I was willing to do that, God provided and said, okay, here you go. And then here we go. And it skyrocketed. I also said, God, if it takes 10 years to lose this weight, fine. And this was November 1st, 1998. I don't care about losing the weight. If I change my thinking, I won't do the thing. If my thinking changes, then I won't eat the way I used to because my thinking will be changed. So I won't want to eat the way I do. And that's what is happening. That is what has happened. And as a result, I ended up losing the weight like the first year and a half. But my head was still nuts, and it's not as nuts anymore, but believe me, it is, and now I can look at it and go, oh, there it goes again, and I can run it by people. And what it's like now is, I also didn't think I was good enough to be a girlfriend or a wife or a mother. And I just got married 2 weeks ago to a beautiful, gorgeous, normal man. Normal, what's normal? That's what I'm starting to wonder, though, actually. Who is so loving and so sweet and strong and all those things that I always thought I wanted and I did want. I just didn't know it. We just bought a house. I bought a condo last year. Food is not an issue today at all. I'm a professional. I like the way I look most of the time. I still focus on areas, though, and I'm like, oh, God, why can't I? You know, believe me. Sometimes I want things that I don't have, and and that's okay, and I can run it by other women and know that that's my head. I don't go to as many meetings as I did my first few years. I went to a meeting a day for, like, the first 3 years because I was so scared, and I didn't know how to do life, and I was just terrified, and the only relief I found was in meetings. What else today? I have an incredible relationship with my family. I hated my family when I came to OA. I blamed them for everything. And I'll tell you something. I had a cousin. She paralleled me in many ways. She was a little bit older than me. She was diagnosed with juvenile diabetes. She never found this program, and she resented the hell out of everybody in our family. She resented herself all the way to death. And that's just my opinion. She died last year from bulimia with juvenile diabetes. So she never got this program. She didn't want to get it. She was angry, and just, it killed her. And I connected to her in many ways. And at my wedding 2 weeks ago, her stepmom, her dad, they both came up to me and they said, you chose God and he gave you life, and she didn't, you know. I guess if there's anything I could leave you with, is that OA is just, you know, a 12-step program for some people, but my experience has been when I was willing to get humble enough to know that something's wrong with me, and that I need to change my insides, my head. My makeup is wrong, and when I was willing to work the steps, and willing to work the traditions, and willing to work the tools, and willing to be of service, a lot of service, especially when I didn't want to. If I didn't want to do it, that was all the more reason to do it. And if I wanted to do it, well, maybe I should think twice about doing it, because my head is skewed. When I was willing to do that stuff and get into a lot of action outside of my head, into the solution, outside of my head, into the literature, outside of my head, into newcomers, you know, outside of my head, into the meetings, picking up things, being of service, my life got incredibly better, much better than it ever was before I came to OA. And OA is an amazing thing, and it's an amazing gift. I just wanted to stop eating. I just wanted to be healthy. I just wanted to be okay in my own skin. I didn't want to keep living the way I was living. I was tired of having all these guys think I'm a great girl, but no one's really attracted to me. You know, it's just a horrible... All that self-hate is gone. I really like myself today. You know? I have a self-respect that I never knew was possible. Because, it's just words until you get it. When you start to feel it, boy, is it different. You know, people say, oh, I love myself, oh, I love myself. I didn't love myself. My sponsor said, you want to love yourself and get yourself flowers? Get out of yourself and be of service to somebody. That's what she'd say to me. And I'd be like, what? But I would do it because I was so afraid of losing what I had. And the thing is that when I got out of myself and I talked to newcomers and I talked to a person who had one day, you know, and I had 62 days, I felt better. And I felt like, I was maybe useful to that person. I wanted to be useful, feel useful. I'm useful to kids now every day. They think I'm a great teacher. My staff thinks like I'm great. And the whole time I'm thinking, I'm just doing what God wants me to do. Every second of every day I go, God, please help me. I can't do this. I need you. I don't know how to talk to these kids. We had a situation yesterday where the girls were fighting over one thing, and I had to go and make all the girls I didn't know what I was doing, and I wrote a little piece of paper. God, you got me here. Show me what to say. And I held on to it while I'm talking to these girls, and they all made up, and it was all fine, and they were all crying and hugging, and somehow everybody got along in the end. But the thing is that I didn't know that God wanted me to do this kind of stuff. See, if we stay and we are willing to work this program and realize that we are not victims, that we got to forgive these people who we resented through the steps. That's what I had to do. I had to pray for them. I had to let them go. I had to realize that they are who they are. And as a result, I have a dad that is just like, I'm daddy's little girl today. And I felt like he never treated me like a little girl because I was fat and angry and pissed and fuck you. And this program gives us more than we could ever imagine, beyond our wildest dreams. And I'm very humbled by it. It's here for the taking. If you think you're too special for it, well, just keep coming back. And thanks for letting me share. Okay, we have time for questions and answers. Questions and opinions, as one may say. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Mary.
Hi, Mary. Thank you. Thanks.
So why
Have known or haven't known?
How could they have known?
How to handle this, you mean? Or
how could they know this? I mean,
no, they did. They did. Oh, they knew. They knew that I had a real problem. But I don't think I was mature enough for the 12 steps. You know, I really don't. I was an adolescent. You know, it was hard for me to get. So they tried and tried, but they also realized that when they kept trying, when they kept going, oh, she, you know, every morning there'd be something missing in the refrigerator. Usually it was the best thing, you know, the best dish, the best ice cream, I don't know. And if it was gone, we all knew who ate it. And then I'd get angry at them because I'd feel like they didn't understand, blah, blah, blah. So what happened was they just stopped. They did kind of like the Al-Anon thing. They just said, we're not going to say anything anymore, and we're going to leave her alone. And I'll be honest, that was the best thing they could have ever done for me. The more they tried to intervene, and the more they tried to tell me what to do, the worse it got. So they let it go, finally. But that was at like 16, 17. And then finally my mom just caught me and said, why don't you go to OA? So in terms of a kid having it, I don't have a kid yet. So I don't know how to deal with it. My sponsor says, you know, why don't you worry about it when you get it, rather than worry about it in the future, you know? I don't know if that helps. But use the program, you know, for all of it. You know, how do I handle my child? And then get the suggestions from those who have kids who have dealt with this. I hope that helps in some way. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know for me it's life or death. I know that it's not about the weight. And I know that, I mean, when you're in the food and you're a higher weight, yes, it is about the weight. However, for me, I had to realize that it's my thinking. And that this program promised me from experience of others that if I change my thinking, God wants me to be an attraction to others. He doesn't want me to promote this thing. He just wants me to be an attraction, that he is here, that he works through me to others. So if God wants me to be an attraction, he's not going to have me be fat and miserable on my way to death in a very miserable, awful way. If God wants me to do his will, he's going to make me an attraction to others, and therefore he won't make me fat. We may be fat in the moment, but if we keep doing what we believe God wants us to do, working with a sponsor who believes there's a higher power who has us in action, my higher power won't make me fat, because I'll be miserable if I'm fat. So it may not happen right away, but if we commit to our food and we're honest with another person, talking to God, your understanding of God, your sponsor's understanding of God for you, whatever that means, I don't know, but we can find all the reasons we want to be different and to get out of here. But that's our disease in our head. That's what my sponsor told me. So that means to get into action and get out of your head. And your higher power will make you happy, joyous, and free. And not something you can't stand about you. Does that make sense? I hope that helps. This is all my opinion, too, by the way, but it's my experience. So I hope that helps. Yeah. Trial and error. I know that's not the answer you want to hear, but my first few years, I mean, even like, I remember just coming home from meetings and being exhausted, you know, from working with newcomers. And, you know, people would want me to sponsor them and be like, oh, I love what you said and I want what you have. And I go, okay, well, start doing these things I did. And they go, oh, well, you know, I'm a bit older. I'm older than you, so you don't understand my situation. You know, I've heard it all, believe me. And the thing is that by trial, I mean, I remember being devastated when someone told me I was young and didn't understand them. Or so I was just like, what? And I ran that by my sponsor. My sponsor says it's not personal. You know, not your problem. We're addicts. So I guess it's just trial and error. The thing is, though, is that when I'm caught up in myself, I always run it by other women. Because I still don't know sometimes if I'm going, yeah, but he, or yeah, but they. I need to run that by my sponsor. Because sometimes it's valid. And I write about it. I write a lot. I was taught in this program to write. So I write about it. I talk about it. And I get feedback from other people in the program who are ahead of me in terms of what is okay and what isn't. But it's trial and error. You know, we can't just decide and be cool with it. It's making mistakes along the way. And it's okay. We don't want to make mistakes, God forbid, you know, but it's really no big deal if we go, oh, you know, I stumbled. As long as we're abstaining, you know, it's okay. I don't know if that helps at all. But call people and write and work with your sponsor. That helps. Anything else? Yeah. When is this over? I'm sorry, good. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Gabriel. I'm sorry. Well, I can't do it just by saying it. I have to do it through a whole process. I write a lot. I write letters to God. I go, dear God, you know, you. You know, I'm effing angry about so-and-so, and I don't know why this, why she did that, and I include it in a 10-step, and I have journals of 10-steps that I read to my sponsor later on or other women in the program. I write about it. Sometimes if I'm still feeling it, you know, I'll call somebody, and I'll say, you know, this is what went on and this is what's going on. I have no problem vocalizing my need to get better. Thank goodness. Actually, it seems to be a good thing. But if I feel it after I'm writing, I'll talk to another woman in the program or another man in your case, or woman, whatever, you know, in the program. And they kind of guide me through it too. Then I pray for them. And my sponsor told me a specific prayer on how to pray for a person we resent. And I found this happened when I prayed for that person and said, may God bless you and keep you, and may he bless me and keep me, in the whole prayer, I didn't get the anger went away. You know, they were no longer better than me, or someone had one up on me. It went away. It was gone. And I still do that to this day. Sometimes I have to say it over and over and over again, though, because I'm still not over it. I talk about it, I write about it, I get on my knees, I pray about it over and over again. And it may not go away right away, but the steps and the tools are the process that we have to get rid of it. It's okay if we have it for a little while, but obviously there's something going on that we need to address, and that's through writing for me and sharing. Okay, time. Thank you very much.